The next talk is from Erwan Renaudot. He is a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Innsbruck in the group of intelligent and interactive systems. He works on decision-making and action learning mechanisms for autonomous robots. Erwan, please go ahead.
Thanks for the introduction and thanks for to the previous speaker, because it was quite interesting for me as a roboticist. And so I'm going to talk a bit about cognition as considered in robotics. So the goal of the workshop is to take inspiration from the octopus that have this multiple and layered cognitive system. And I didn't know so much about that, so I learned a couple of things today. That's nice. And to try to apply this kind of principle or principle that are coming from Brooks, which I will talk about later. What I'm going to talk today is about how we consider cognition in robotics. And I just wanted to highlight what you wrote as the workshop abstract. So the idea is to take this octopus as inspiration, and especially the fact that they seem to have some kind of layered cognitive systems. And you also made the parallel with Brooks' work that I will talk about a bit later. And that use that as an inspiration for automated systems and especially robots. So in this talk, I'm not going to talk about octopuses because, as I mentioned, I didn't know so much about them. But I'm going to talk about what we consider cognitive system and how we use this layering principle in robotics up to now. And I think we can maybe make some parallel with what we have seen today about the octopus, but that probably is good for discussion. So I wrote cognition in quotation mark because we use these words a lot in robotics, but it's one of these concepts that is not so well defined in general, or at least that many people use with different definition, and that's the case also in robotics. But there is David Vannon's definition, which is a good synthesis of what can be useful for robotics. And in robotics, we need this kind of precise definition because we want to, if we talk about the concept, we want to make it something we can use on the machine. So we need to program it, or we need to design it, engineer it. And so we need this kind of feature that we can rely on. And Vannon defines cognition as the process by which an autonomous system perceives its environment, learns from experience, anticipates the outcome of events, adds to pursue goals, and adapts to changing circumstances. And this is a good definition for us roboticists because it gives us many different aspects we can work on in terms of robotics and engineering. And if we talk about cognitive robotics, I think it's quite interesting to look a bit in the past, the history of our discipline. This is a tentative non-exhaustive graph, but I think it's interesting to look at how robotics and cognitive science kind of started and have parents, have cybernetics as parents. And there is this idea that this science is interested in this system with feedback, a system that can react and adapt to the environment. And of course, robotic evolved a lot. Now there are many different fields related that are within robotics and related to how to build a robot, what kind of robotic application we can consider, and what are the specific things of this application. And also some actually non-engineering topics, for example, the ethics of robotics, or this kind of, or the how to make robot interact with human, and what's the, let's say, robot concepts from a philosophical point of view. So this is, when we talk about robotics, we talk about we can talk about very wide categories of subfields. And robotics, of course, born into show robotics, which has been mostly what has been developed in the 60s, 70s, and so on. But then robotics in the 80s kind of redefined itself from the science of how to build robots to the science that study intelligent connection between perception and action. And from that, the I would say the field evolved into cognitive robotics, or the cognitive robotics subfield kind of appeared, also inheriting some ideas from cognitive science, embodied cognitive science. So cognitive robotics is really interdisciplinary subfields, and it's united by the fact that we aim to design an integrated cognitive system that combines sensory motor behavior at an higher level functions and social capability of an intelligent robot. And up to now, I've talked about robot and robotics, but what is a robot? So this sounds like a very simple question, but it's not so much, because if we look at, once again, at the history of what kind of machines that would fit robots have been produced, we also see machines like the automatic duck from Vaucanson that could eat and produce feces all by itself. There is also the example of the armor from Leonardo da Vinci that has been, I think, never been actually produced, but was designed by da Vinci. And so this is a machine that could move by itself without external apparent operation. Then we have the well-known industrial robots that produce whatever our car or any other object that we use in our daily life. We have also the science fiction robots, the humanoid robot that is a companion and that can that is there for in our everyday life. And finally, some applications, for example, these surveillance robots that can evolve in the streets and like detect some unexpected, like non-desirable situation, traffic incidents, maybe crime, and so on. And what we call robots here in the frame of this talk is more of this cognitive robot. So the something closer to the, of course, science fiction robots. And especially we are focusing on some specific points. And one is the fact that the machine has some kind of behavioral autonomy, so that no one is directly operating it. And the intervention of the human is only within in the real world, and we are not controlling directly the robots. And this machine also evolves in unstructured environments. So we are not in the situation of a very nice, clean lab environment, but we want these robots to evolve in houses. So with potentially clutter and pets going around and all these unexpected events. And another interesting capability that you want this machine to have is be able to learn, to adapt their behavior depending on the feedback of their environment, either to learn how to do new tasks or to learn the proper way to interact with human. And this learning aspect is something very important. And finally, and this point is for a discussion we had with Maud when she was in Innsbruck, I think when we talk about cognitive robots, we are talking about physical machines. So robots that are only simulated are not our focus. We want robots that are actually interacting in our real world, although we can use simulation to develop them. But this physical machine point is important for us. We want this embodiment into our reality. And so these robots usually are organized with different things. A robot has sensors through which it perceives the world. And you can see here, so this is a point cloud of the world. So it just says what are the distance from the robot to the environment. in a 3D manner, and also provides the illumination of these points, so we can know the color. For example, here this table is somewhat maroon, brown, and this object is kind of blue. Here we have a laser rangefinder that also gives us some distance information, but in a plane. And through the sensor, the robot perceives its world and can generate data that will be used for processing afterwards. And processing means having some code that will process data with more or less complexity in order to produce commands that we can use to move actuators. And this is another important part of robotics. So we have actuators that allows us, our machine has actuators that can actually interact and change this physical world. But this picture, the previous picture is a bit simple because if we look at robots, for each part of the robot, there are usually many different sensors, many different actuators. So we can, if we want to move the arm, we have a lot of motors to control. The same for the heads, and the same for the mobile base to get the robot navigating around. And all of this comes usually with control board and processing units that are more or less developed depending on what kind of processing and computation are needed. So one of the first problem that robotics faced is how to organize all the software and functionality of the robot. And that's where AI came into play. So the first work on control architecture for robots used a very sequential organization of the function and the corresponding code. So in the case of Shaky, for example, which is the emblematic robot from like this period, the 60s, 70s, their control architecture is a sequential process. So they take data from the sensor. From this data, they build world models. So either a symbol that describe how the world is, or maps, 3D maps maybe, our higher level representation of what the world is. And based on this representation that are produced at this step, they can do planning, so simulate consequence of action and evaluate the next states in order to reach a certain goal that is given to the robot. And once this plan is done, they can finally execute this plan, so take each step and send the proper control to the motor, to the actuators of the robots to make it move in the environment. And so that kind of architecture worked well in what I call stable and abstractable environments. So if nothing is moving in the environment, this is okay. Like you can take the time to make a plan and execute it, and that should work fine. And abstractable means that you can represent your environment into some symbol that the planning level can take into account. But of course, there are many problems with this approach. The first one, for example, is that planning can become intractable with a real world. So if you take, for example, chess, which already has a big stage space, or tic-tac-toe, these are problems with, these are closed problems. So you can, there are boundaries to the world of this problem. But in the real world, there are no clear boundaries. So planning can become very, very complex and very, very long. Then this process, modeling and planning, are actually potentially very slow. And the real world might evolve in the meantime. So if you spend a lot of time thinking about what you do, but then the environment has changed, your plan is actually not relevant anymore. This is one important limitation of this approach. The world, the reasoning system function with closed world. Usually they have this set of symbols that are predefined and that are recognized at the perception and modeling steps. But if you add a new object, for example, and this object has not been pre-programmed into the reasoning system, then you can't take that into account. And of course, you can't describe the whole world before. So this is a limitation, again, for this approach. And finally, the last problem with this approach is that once you've planned and you execute your plan, there is no sensing until you're done executing your plan, which is obviously dangerous if something unexpected happens. And this was initially inspired by the idea of how human reason rationally and consciously, but this is kind of a ideal version of the logical human. And in practice, this is rarely true. On the other side, after this deliberative approach, the reactive approach got developed, and the idea here is not to separate the software, the robots, into functional module, but rather by task achieving module. And the idea here is that you develop first your avoid objects module that is doing this basic obstacle avoidance. And this is a direct connection between sensor, or kind of direct connection between sensor and actuators. And when this is tested and working, then you can move to more complex behavior, for example, wandering, exploring, and so on. And this was, of course, a game changer, because compared to these very slow and unreactive robots, we moved to a robot that were reacting immediately to their environment, and that would move very fast in their environment. And this created a whole branch of what we call behavior-based robotics that I won't go into detail with, but yeah, this was a really game-changing approach. And we mentioned it at the beginning, Brooks is probably the most famous work on that. So the idea is that you have state machine, and the state machine are managing a behavior, implementing a behavior between sensors to actuators to robots. And the next layer has a higher priority. And so in this case, it's this wander and avoid layer. And this can subsume the lower behavior. So when these modules are active, they take control over the lower module commands and they change the behavior of the robots. And another approach that is maybe less known, but also very interesting, is the one from Arkin. And here you have a set of sensing strategy that updates the environment model. And so in this case, for example, a map. And on the other side, you have a set of motor behavior, which are pre-coded response in the environment. And the idea here is that you generate fields, potential fields, so like magnets, either repulsive fields for obstacles, or directional fields here for moving forwards. And by combining mathematically these fields, you can actually generate a very efficiently behavior. So here the robot would move in the environment, and as soon as it gets close to this obstacle, there is a force produced by this obstacle that's push the robot away. And this would naturally make the robot turn around and go to the top of the environment. And so on, and you can easily combine, for example, here it's a stay on pass potential fields. And yeah, this allows you to very easily build these reactive robots. Of course, this approach also has limitation, and that was the sense of my question about whether they are pure representational or animals, or animals with no representation at all. There is a priority problem with Brooks' approach. So if you have multiple wandering strategies, which one should subsume the other one is not easy to define. Another example is with this takeoff and land behavior. There are two tasks that have kind of the same priority. So it's difficult to design a system that properly accounts for the behavior that we want, just based on this kind of architecture. And with Arkin, there is what we call environmental trap, which are this location in the potential field that sums up to zero. And in this case, the robot might just get stuck because it's only reacting to what the environment is. So In this case, it just came here to the in front of the epsilon and stops because the, all the forces are equivalent, and then it is stuck because it has no way to get out of that. And the proposition is to, in Arkin, they propose to just add noise, which works in this case, and they allow the robot to avoid this potential 0 points. But the problem still is there because, for example, if the robot is in a potential field that makes it rotate around the environment, it will just keep doing that without the possibility to do something else. And this approach, lack of internal representation and the ability to plan to the long term. And finally, the third approach that emerged from that is this hybrid approach that's aimed to think and act concurrently. And the idea is to combine the previous approach because reactive sensory models are desirable to avoid this unexpected situation and keep the robots reactive to what happened. And on the other side, the long-term planning AI inherited modules are very interesting to have this horizon of where you should be in a certain time or a certain number of states. And the problem that this architecture tried to solve is how to sequence coordinates between these two type of layer. And when should the planning deliberation level be controlling the robots, and when should the reactive lower level control the robots? And there have been a lot of propositions on that. I'm not going to go into detail, especially that I have less than 5 minutes. But this is one example of layered architecture with 3 or 2 layers, depending on the subtlety of each design. And the message here is that in robotics, we've been using this layer principle, but probably in a different way than just what Brooks proposed. Here, the layers are based on temporal scale and abstraction. So the higher the layer, the more abstract is the function. But it's not just a task achieving behavior, it's more of a function in the idea of the first, a cognitive function, let's say. And then, so the evolution of this control architecture are more complex cognitive architecture, and this cognitive architecture includes, for example, the idea of a developmental approach. So the idea that instead of focusing on how to build an adult robot, let's try to see how to make the robot develop from the beginning to advanced stage. This is one important point in this modern cognitive architecture. And learning processes are also very important, and they concern many different aspects of cognition, like language that I'm not so familiar with, but also motor learning, affordances, and so on. And these are making this cognitive architecture more complex, which is actually my point now. That's We had this control system initially, but now we are trying to going over this, going further than these just control points, makes the system much more complex. And if we have to design everything at once, it's a quite difficult step. So I want to talk about another type of layering, but this one more focused on within the cognitive function, which is decision making. From the study of mammals, the instrumental conditioning in psychology, we know that some mammals exhibit different type of behavior, specifically two, which depends on how much they are trained to do a certain task. And if we put food in one arm of this maze, and we let the animal run in this maze for some time, at the beginning it's hesitating at the crossing, and it has what we call goal-directed behavior. We assume it's using some kind of internal model after exploring the maze to learn that there is this structure and the food is in this arm. And if we switch the food location to another arm, the animal will first not find the food, but then quickly change its behavior to explore again and move to the new arm with food. On the other side, if you let the animal train much more, then it becomes, its behavior becomes what we call habitual. And in this case, it's much more automatic. And in this case, when you change the food location, the animal will keep going in this arm for a long time before it actually changes its behavior. But on the other side, the animals act quite quickly. And in healthy animals, the behavior is hypothesized to be a combination of these two types of behavior, which make the animal able to actually change, like use its goal-directed behavior when the task changes, but use its habitual behavior when the task is repetitive and similar. And these are modeled in the computational neuroscience literature with reinforcement learning, two types of reinforcement learning, model-based and model-free. And within this here, what is interesting is that within the same function, which is decision-making, we have two strategies that we could call layered. And I'm talking about that because we use these results from psychology to design a robotic control system. So in the decision layer, we had these two types of behavior implemented as reinforcement learning algorithm. And we designed, we studied how to coordinate them and if it would actually be interesting for robotics to have such a system. Yes. And we evaluated this architecture in navigation tasks where the robot has to reach the certain location in the environment. And what we show is that a robot equipped with this architecture, which is in the purple here, can perform as well as a robot that is fully planning, so a kind of goal-directed robot that is anticipating all the consequences of its action. But on the other side, is as efficient, so it's still the purple layer here, in terms of cost, because it uses much less computational time to find the good strategy. And we studied how these two strategies are coordinates, and we showed that they correspond to more or less when we switch the reward location, the use of each strategy changes as well. And what I want to point out here is that having this kind of strategy layering is actually an interesting idea for robotics. And like this bio-inspiration brings new approach and ideas to robotics that can be useful. And so I only have this slide on robotics because on Octopus, because I don't know so much about Octopus, I only found this work about, but in my opinion, it focused more on the flexible actuator and the fact that we can easily grasp from that. And I think Octopus are maybe not so studied or used in robotics as a model because they are quite different from mammal cognition. And we aim in robotics, our model is initially the mammal or the human. But on the other side, maybe the robots are actually quite different from mammals anyway. So Octopus could be a good inspiration. So I hope I didn't lose too many of you, but the take-home message is that in robotics, in cognitive architecture, we have this kind of layering, which is mostly based initially on the abstraction and functionality of the difference for the robots. Newer, more modern cognitive architecture are getting more modular, not so much layers, but they are trying to add what is perceived as cognitive function, like learning and so on. And it's also possible to do this layering within one cognitive function. And this is proved to be a quite interesting approach, actually. And that's it. Thanks for your attention.